This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. Welcome to Monday. It's August 3rd, 2020. Brand new week, brand new edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart in for Cisco Cotto. The pandemic has claimed another retail victim. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, negotiations continue in Washington over a COVID relief bill, while the report on U.S. manufacturing kicks off a busy week of data. We're joined by Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Greg, welcome back to the program. When it comes to the negotiations over the COVID-19 relief bill part two, there are some things that everyone seems to agree on. And the first one is another round of COVID stimulus payments. So check your bank account soon.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons that we saw the big burst in economic activity as states were reopening, back in May and June, Rob, is that people had money to spend. And so there's a lot of concern about not just the $600 a week federal unemployment assistance that expired at the end of July, but the fact that those stimulus payments really helped some of that pent up demand as the economy was reopening.
Well, let's talk about that $600 a week federal unemployment enhancement that did expire on Saturday. Democrats want that to continue. They voted for that already in the House, in a House bill that has not reached the Senate. But the Donald Trump and the Republicans want a $200 enhanced benefit. Will they meet in the middle?
Oh, who knows? They got to do something quick, though, because the mere threat of that money not being there or an interruption in the flow of that money affects household financial decisions. And so, while a lot was made of the fact that 68% of those were actually receiving more on unemployment than they were working, we're glossing over the fact that those that are laid off or furloughed are really just the tip of the iceberg of those feeling the financial impact. We found an equal amount that had taken a pay cut, were working fewer hours, or just couldn't run their business as usual. All told, about half of American households have taken a financial hit from the pandemic. And not all of that is being equally addressed.
Would the fact that the election is less than 100 days away swing the White House around to Nancy Pelosi's way of thinking? Because regardless of ideology, political parties tend to get a little more generous as Election Day approaches.
I'm not a political handicapper, but yeah, you're right. You look at the calendar, it's an election year, we're into August, and things start to add up. So, people tend to vote with their wallets, and if their wallets are not in good shape, it tends to be the incumbents that suffer.
Let's talk about a couple of reports. We do have the jobs report coming out on Friday, but we do have the report on manufacturing activity that suggests things picked up in July.
If you looked at it in a vacuum, you'd think, wow, this is great. Manufacturing is really humming along. But then when you take a step back and you look at the bigger picture of the collapse in March through May, it kind of puts the rebound that we've seen in June and July in context, that, it's just a matter of kind of revving the engines back up and digging out of the hole that was created earlier this year.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst, Bankrate.com, based in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Coming up, a famous name in retail gets in line behind some other famous names in bankruptcy court.
Money Talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Lord & Taylor, one of America's oldest department stores, has filed for bankruptcy. Let's talk about it with Jan Rogers Niffen, who is the CEO of J. Rogers Niffen Worldwide in New York. Jan, welcome back to the program. When it comes to retailers lining up in bankruptcy court, it's starting to look like the list of anchor stores at a really popular mall 30 years ago. Lord & Taylor, Neiman Marcus, a number of big names have filing for Chapter 11.
Yeah, you left out JCPenney, who also filed. So if you looked at the anchors there, they're all in trouble. And of course, Macy's has also announced that it's going to close a whole bunch of the anchor stores in the malls. So all of the anchors have shown really damage from COVID. But as you and I both know, they were showing damage long before COVID. So if you look at the list of retailers I have going bankrupt, there's 23 at the moment, I think, on my list that have already filed. There's like 43 on the S&P list that filed because they track a broader group than I do. That would be the most. This year will be the most since 2008, 2009 timeframe. So the most in a decade that have filed for bankruptcy. And we've also seen a lot of them just reducing store footprint, even if they're not going bankrupt, right? They're closing stores and getting smaller and putting more of their business percentage-wise online. That trend has been going on, you know, since at least, well, before 2014, but I started writing about it in 2014. All this did was really accelerate it. So all the people on the list that I've got here that are going bankrupt, I would have said we're in danger of going bankrupt sometime between now and 2025 anyway, but it's all been accelerated now into 2020 because of COVID.
When these brands emerge from bankruptcy court, obviously they're probably going to sell a lot of real estate and emerge with a much smaller footprint. Even though the business model of everybody going to the shopping mall and loading up on clothes, the department store is increasingly becoming a relic of the past. Do these names have any cachet? So if someone wanted to reconvert them to an online only type of brand, would a Lord & Taylor or a Macy's carry a lot of weight with the shopping public?
Enough that somebody wants to run those brands, right? Whether you're J. Crew who filed or Neiman's, or whether you're Ascena who filed, you know, basically Justice and Taylor and Loft. All of those names, Lord & Taylor included, will probably get kept, right? Men's Warehouse, Joseph A. Banks. Those are probably not going away. They'll probably be reconstituted. There'll be a smaller footprint. There'll be fewer stores. But those names have a real resonance with a certain part of the community, and people will shop there. And so somebody definitely wants to own the intellectual property. But they probably won't want to own even more than just the intellectual property. Some of the stores stay around and still run forward. Then there's a big online presence, and so you get benefit out of the name. So I don't expect to see those good names go away. I expect those names to be in the process for a long time, but I sure don't think that they're going to be the size in physical store footprint that they've been. I don't think anybody is, whether you've gone bankrupt or not. Everybody is shrinking the footprint except for like the big boxes. The Walmarts are still strong, right? The Best Buy is still strong. Home Depot, Lowe's, those kind of guys, they're still growing. But these mall-based specialty kind of retailers, and even non-mall-based specialty retailers, a lot of them are going to shrink their footprints.
All right. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Jan Rogers Niffen, CEO, J. Rogers Niffen Worldwide, based in New York. Coming up next, Chinese-based app TikTok could be getting new American ownership.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Microsoft has confirmed that it's held talks with the Chinese technology company ByteDance to acquire its tremendously popular social media app TikTok in the U.S. We're joined by Ryan Vlastelica, equities reporter for Bloomberg, based in New York. Ryan, welcome to the program. At first blush, this seems like it solves two problems. One, it brings TikTok into the U.S. and potentially eliminates any concerns about sensitive American data falling into Chinese hands. And it also allows Microsoft to become a big player in the world of social media.
Yes, I'd say that's right on both of those counts.
And so what's they confirmed talks over the weekend. They hope to have a deal by September.
Yes, that's currently the case right now. There's still obviously a lot of things that are uncertain, a lot of questions that need to be answered. You know, the Trump administration just a few days ago was talking about banning TikTok, and to go from that to a point where Microsoft buys it, you know, it's a pretty big turnaround. Now, Microsoft has talked about the need for more, you know, privacy restrictions on the app, more data privacy. All those things could maybe help relieve some of the concerns that have been bandied about with TikTok and the administration. But again, it's hard to know right now if a deal will go through and what it might look like. And, you know, we still don't have any kind of real understanding of how much Microsoft might be willing to pay for it and, you know, what it would be sold for.
Now, there had been a number of concerns about the privacy of American data and whether or not Chinese state actors would use that for nefarious means. They had been kind of circling around TikTok for over a year, and to the point where the Biden campaign actually forbid its staffers from using TikTok. So this had been building before President Trump said on Friday that he would ban the app. And ByteDance has said that data from American users is kept on American servers. When all of this is said and done, will Microsoft be able to pull this off, or will it be derailed at the regulatory stage?
Again, there's still so much that we don't know. A lot of the analysts who have come out talking about this seem, you know, fairly optimistic that Microsoft will be able to do it. It seems, you know, more likely that TikTok would go in the hands of an American company rather than remaining in China. But you know, we don't know. And, you know, keep in mind that just last week we had, you know, hearings in Congress about antitrust issues, and a lot of the major technology companies, you know, notably Facebook, Alphabet and so forth, you know, where they're talking about these issues. So the fact that Microsoft, you know, making a huge acquisition and getting into the space, if that raises any antitrust issues, you know, that also remains to be seen. So there's certainly a lot of questions.
Yeah, very quickly, would that make Microsoft a formidable player in the world of social media?
Well, TikTok is extremely popular, especially with younger users. There's a lot of overlap with, say, Snapchat. It's not nearly as large as Facebook. I think about 165 million Americans have a TikTok account, whereas, you know, for Facebook, it's significantly larger. But, I mean, 2 billion people use TikTok globally. It is a major player in the space, and certainly it would insert Microsoft into the social media sector in a big way.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Ryan Vlastelica, equities reporter with Bloomberg based in New York. Still ahead, two well-known names in transportation teaming up to develop a supersonic aircraft.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A suspect is in custody in the deadly shooting of a 9-year-old boy who was playing on the near north side. Virgin Galactic and Rolls-Royce are partnering to build an aircraft for supersonic air travel. It's Stock Picker Monday. We'll get to a couple of ideas from an investing pro. WBBM Business. The markets are higher. The Dow is up 243 points. The Nasdaq is up 150. The S&P 500 is up 26. AccuWeather says clouds and breaks of sunshine today, breezy and cool with a brief shower or two and a high of 73. Right now we have 69 degrees at O'Hare under cloudy skies. It's 12:31. The Noon Business Hour continues, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. A couple of local stories making news at this hour. Police have arrested a suspect following the shooting death of a 9-year-old boy in Chicago. The story from WBBM's Rachel Pearson.
Chicago police say a person of interest is in custody for killing 9-year-old Janari Ricks in the Cabrini Green neighborhood. Ricks was shot while playing outside Friday night, and officials say his stepfather was the intended target. Chief of Detectives Brendan Dinahan.
And unfortunately, as the bullets are flying, it's the 9-year-old who is shot and killed. And then this defendant makes good his escape.
Superintendent David Brown said it's because of community members quickly coming forward with information that a person is now behind bars.
This is the best example of a community coming forward. There are also other examples where we get tips, but we need to gain momentum in this area in order to see the crime decline in the ways that we all deserve.
Officials say they hope to have charges against the suspect secured within the next day or two. Rachel Pearson, News Radio, 105.9 FM.
Members of the Chicago Teachers Union have taken to the streets downtown over the decision by Chicago Public Schools to move forward with hybrid learning this fall.
Educators and support staff met earlier at CTUHQ and gathered in a caravan to circle City Hall, where they asked the mayor and CPS to put robust efforts into developing fully online classes and Wi-Fi access for all to begin the school year. This as many school districts have begun to reverse prior decisions to go with a hybrid learning model for students this fall. Max Cole teaches at Manly Career Academy High School. He is in his seventh year as an educator. He says he often tells his students that they are put on this earth to defy the impossible.
However, I'll tell you what's impossible. What's impossible is for me to be in the classroom with my students this year. What's impossible is for us to ensure that our students, educators, faculty, staff, and administrators will be able to finish the school year with a clean bill of health this year. That's what's impossible.
From City Hall, Brandon Eisen, News Radio, 105.9 FM.
If you're among the many still working remotely, ask your smart speaker to play WBBM News Radio for all the latest developments. WBBM News Time, 12:33, as the noon business hour continues. The markets are higher today. We're joined by Paul Nolte, Portfolio Manager, Kingsview Asset Management, based in Chicago. Paul, welcome back to the program. And it's tech stocks that have kicked the markets into higher gear today.
Yeah, it is. It's all tech all the time, and certainly a little bit of post-earnings euphoria still going with a lot of those tech names that reported very good, better-than-expected earnings last week. And it is a result of the pandemic and the fact that everybody is working from home, ordering online, and those types of things. And it is benefiting the technology names, which are really coming to the fore here and filling that void of how do we go about working if we're not all in the same place at the same time.
One of the second quarter companies to watch as they report this week is Disney. At first glance, you would say that many aspects of the Walt Disney Company have been exposed to and hurt by COVID. People don't travel. Disney World just reopened. Movies aren't being released. At the same time, everyone's home watching Disney Plus. So how are analysts, what are they predicting as far as what Disney's going to report for Q2?
Yeah, and the other component to that, too, is ESPN, and we now have sports at least for a while to watch. So it's going to be very much a mixed bag for Disney. Disney's been really kind of struggling here, at least to gain momentum in the marketplace because of those conflicting parts of the business. And when you step back and take a look, it does make sense the way they've constructed it. The current environment is a difficult one for them to navigate. So it's going to be very interesting to see a couple things. One is, what are they expecting going forward as far as how they're going to reopen some of the parks? What are their expectations for also the Disney Plus channel, and what are they seeing in subscriber growth there? So I think there's going to be a couple things that analysts are going to look at. I'm not sure they're going to get a clean pass this quarter. It may be another 6 months or so before we start to see Disney get out from underneath some of the dark clouds.
Well, in the situation of any entertainment company, it seems like as long as the infrastructure exists to hit the ground running, once we turn the page from the pandemic, would analysts or lenders or just the business community in general look on it with kindness?
I think so, but again, it's just a matter of how long. We thought that originally when we were back in March and April, certainly in March, we thought, well, this is going to last a little while. We get into May and we're, well, maybe through the summer, and here we are in the summer going, well, hopefully by the end of the year. So again, the health part of this is the huge question mark, and really is the overriding issue as to whether people feel comfortable going out and doing those types of things that are going to garner them revenue and profits. And right now, it's still a big question mark.
On the health side of things, Eli Lilly gaining 1.4% because they announced the start of a phase 3 trial of a experimental COVID antibody treatment. When the markets look at these news releases from pharmaceutical companies, do they look at them from a financial perspective or an epidemiologist perspective? I mean, how do they determine if these treatments are going to work?
They don't. I think they really take a look and say, yep, we're in phase 3. Great. Let's buy some stock. And then think about it a little bit later. We've seen a lot of these stocks jump on the news only to get reversed later on. And they say, well, we don't have a good sample size or maybe the efficacy isn't what we anticipated. So we're getting a lot of news in advance of what we would normally get for a lot of drugs. Normally, we don't get this type of news until they're ready to come to market with drugs and they have a lot more research behind it. Because of the virus and everybody grasping for news, any little bit gets these stocks to pop. So the way for us to play it really is to look at an ETF or a mutual fund that really focuses in on the pharmaceuticals or the biotech area, because we're not quite sure who's going to come to market first with a viable drug.
That's Paul Nolte, Portfolio Manager, Kingsview Asset Management, based in Chicago. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The space tourism company Virgin Galactic has signed an agreement with Rolls-Royce to develop an aircraft for supersonic travel. We're joined by Ken Goldstein, president of KJG International Consulting, based in Chicago. Ken, welcome back to the program. The Concorde was retired 17 years ago, and it seems that Richard Branson wants to bring back the heady days of British Airways being the world's favorite airline with champagne, and you can wing across the Atlantic, New York to London in 4 hours.
I see. Well, first off, thanks for having me on, Rob. Great to speak with you again. I see you've been taking part of the toasting. But As you pointed out, the Concorde has been retired since 2003. They are great monuments to look at. There's even one in Seattle and in New York and France. But the long and short of it, while this is great, this is a lot of hype, because this afternoon, Virgin Galactic is going to announce its earnings, but they're not going to announce them until after the markets close. So this was a good thing for them to do. The other thing is they've got competition out there. And those include people like Boom, which we've talked about on the radio here, Ariane Supersonic, and Spike Aerospace. But the problem you run into, even if they get all this done and the first flights take place in maybe 2023, 2024, you're talking of between 9 and maybe 20, 25 people on a plane. The cost effectiveness is not there. That's first off. Secondly, the sonic boom, while the technology is there, that the boom will not be as bad, there are still laws on the book which ban overland flights, both in the United States and in Europe. So you're talking of a flight that maybe would go maybe from here to London, maybe here to Paris, as the Concorde did, or if the Chinese want to do it in domestically there, that's about it. But again, the cost is going to be very much. Remember, Virgin Galactic is their goal is to do suborbital flights. In other words, take you up high, maybe 60,000, 65,000 feet in the air, and then bring you back down. And you're flying at Mach 3. But again, you can't do that over land. So from a commercial enterprise, it's going to be tough. Going back to that suborbital flights, they're talking of $250,000 per passenger. So you and I are not going to be taking those flights.
Well, I mean, and to go back to the original Concorde, it was a money loser for British Airways and for Air France. And this was for a route that had, you know, regular commercial scheduling, had a much larger capacity. And the Richard Branson idea of like just a near spaceship taking you to London seems even less cost effective than the original plane.
Yeah, the idea was fine. It took care of the 1% who needed to get there immediately. But, you know, look at it now. First off, British Airways, this was an attempt with the Concorde. They teamed up with the French as well to restore their sovereignty, dignity, pride in their aerospace industries. And they are pretty good, both Airbus today and British Aircraft Corporation. But the fact of the matter is, look at the A380, this great big airplane that the French or Airbus consortium built. They're being retired after a service life of up to less than 10 years. Why? It's too costly to fly four-engine aircraft. And even with the amount of people on board, or as the Emirates do, make their super first class, it's not cost effective. And particularly now with the pandemic, until we can get people feeling safe about flying, all these things are pies in the sky.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Ken Goldstein, president of KJG International Consulting, based in Chicago. And if you're a true aviation geek, you can fall down the rabbit hole of when Braniff leased a Concorde to run from New York to Dallas. Join us this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday, and still to come, a pair of ideas from our Monday stock picker.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It is Stock Picker Monday, sponsored by the Wealth Management Group. And joining us with a pair of investment ideas today is Michael Palumbo, manager of the TMT Perseverance Fund and author of the book Calculated Risk, based in Chicago. Michael, thanks for joining us this afternoon. You got two picks today, and let's start with your first one, a plucky little company out of Atlanta, Georgia, called Coca-Cola.
Good afternoon, Robin. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, Coke, it's an underloved stock right now because of COVID. You know, it was $60 in February. It's 46.5 now. The thing is, this stock is going back to 60. It's just a question of when. My guess is next year. So we got to be patient. But no one's stopping drinking Coca-Cola. And they're also getting into hard seltzer. They're in the right areas. They're just being affected by restaurant shutdowns and things like that. But both these stocks I'm advocating are going to be COVID stocks, but they're going to end up outperforming the market. You just have to be patient. So with Coke, you know, it may be a while, but the thing is it's going to move up at any sign that the economy is on the other side of this virus, and that could be right away. So you need to get in now, because when it does move, and it's going to it will happen. When it does move, you need to already be in it, because it's going to be quick.
Before we move on to the next one, so Coca-Cola really getting hurt, not only by fewer people going out to eat, but an entire nation full of empty sports facilities.
No doubt about it. And those are the drags on the stock. But, you know, if you look far enough in advance, you know, out in the future, and really you don't have to look that far, we don't have to have stadiums full anymore for Coke to do well. Just restaurants doing a little bit better, and that is going to happen. So Coke again, you buy it, it's one of those stocks you buy, you forget about for a while, and then the next thing you look at it 6 months from now, and it's 20% higher. It's just it's a better risk reward than some of these tech stocks that, in my opinion, now are overbought. You know, it's risky because it's a COVID stock, but in the long run, Coca-Cola is a solid bet.
And what's your next COVID stock?
So Ulta Beauty, and that's another stock that, you know, I picked two that I believe they're riskier because they're COVID stocks, but they're also ones that I think are the risk reward is fantastic. So it's a $190 stock, trading 25 times earnings, but this is a growth stock that has easily 40 to 50% upside. They're still opening new stores even during COVID, which shows you the value of this brand. Obviously it's slowed, and that shows in the stock, but this is a best of breed in an area that at any sign of recovery, and this thing is going to fly. So again, another stock that you put in your portfolio, you forget about it for 3 to 6 to 9 months, and the next thing you know it will be trading 20 to 30 to 40% higher once the market believes that we're on the other side of this virus.
All right, well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Michael Palumbo, manager of the TMT Perseverance Fund, author of the book Calculated Risk. His stocks for the week: Coca-Cola, the symbol KO, and Ulta Beauty, ULTA. Ulta. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly, WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.